What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey guys, it's Forward Thinking. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And we are still back. If you listened to the previous episode, Water on Mars, you know that we were on hiatus for a while. We are now back. And this is the second of two episodes we recorded before we were officially on hiatus.
But way never... back in October of 2015.
So we're going to tell you the future of the past.
Yes.
This is something that we recorded back in October 2015. It's all about Li-Fi. And so some of the references may be a tad dated because we were recording a few months ago. But we wanted to release it because we were really proud of it, mm-hmm. thought it was a good episode. And we've got lots of new episodes coming up in the next year. So we wanted to get back on track, get things going, and hope you enjoy this now classic new episode of Forward Thinking. Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, there's a light over at the Frankenstein place. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
Hey, so guys, we talked about something a year ago or so. We're recording this in October 2015. But about a year ago, September 2014, we talked about a problem that's happening. And it's happening across the developed world, places where the internet has reached real penetration. And that problem is that a lot of the devices we use rely on radio signals to communicate with the infrastructure that connects to the internet backbone.
Ah, the spectrum crunch.
Yes.
Is that what you're talking to?
Exactly, yeah. The spectrum crunch. That's a real issue. And the issue is not something where, like, you have a limited amount of radio in the entire world and it's all going to go away. It's very much a kind of a congestion. Think of it like a traffic jam in a particular region.
For the same reason that they ask you to put your phone on airplane mode when you're in an airplane, it is this thing that we're talking about, because signal interference can become a very serious issue in that case.
Well, not only just signal interference, but if you've got too many, like, have you ever been in, let's say, a really crowded coffee shop and you want to connect to the Wi-Fi there, but you occasionally find that you're being bumped off the Wi-Fi or things are really slowing down and clogging up. Often it's because whatever Wi-Fi router the coffee shop is using has a lower capacity than what is being demanded of it. So in other words, the devices we use have a limited ability to deal with the demand that we are placing upon them. And it's getting worse by the day because not only are we getting more smartphones and tablets and smart watches and all this other stuff that's using those radio waves, we're also entering the era of the Internet of Things, which is requiring even more stuff to connect to.
So that your fridge and your car tires and your Rubik's Cube can all connect to the Internet.
Your cufflinks.
Your dog's collar.
Hatchet.
Yes. Our mystical axe is not Wi-Fi enabled, but we're getting an upgrade.
Soon.
So, your Rubik's Cube is on the Internet. Joe failed to solve me again.
Yeah. That would essentially it would just be a message like that for me all the time. Jonathan has low spatial awareness. The interesting thing here is that this problem's not going to go away. It's not going to get any easier. In fact, there are places like here in the United States that have recently declared broadband access as being a necessity, not a luxury. There was a White House report that came out earlier in 2015 that specifically called out broadband access as a necessity. And they defined broadband as, I think, 25 megabits per second or faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meaning same like electricity, right?
Well, because knowledge and interconnectivity is critical in this, our modern world.
Yes, we rely on it for communication. We rely on it for commerce. So we have this problem, and we have this this increasing urgency to find a way of dealing with it. And there are other issues with Wi-Fi besides the fact that you can have a capacity crunch in any given time and place depending upon demand. Another is that they're not always that efficient to use these radio waves. In fact, that's all they do. And so you're dedicating them to this one purpose. And I think the percentage I saw was that they are essentially 5% efficient in the amount of energy you're using them and the amount of actual work they're doing.
Hmm.
Yeah. So 95% of the energy you're pouring into these things is just being bled away. Also, like you were saying, Lauren, you've got the problem with interference. You know, that's why you aren't allowed to use devices on airplanes unless you've switched it to Wi-Fi. You can't use the cellular data. You can't use them in places like hospitals where it might interfere with medical equipment. That's another issue.
Sure.
I've got a complaint. When I wrap my computer up in aluminum foil, it can't get a Wi-Fi signal.
Right, but they also can't see what you're doing anymore, right? So
that is the important part.
We call it our NSA protection case.
And you can't see what you're doing anymore either.
Well,
so you're protecting your fragile sanity.
Yeah,
I'm trying to come up with some transparent aluminum foil.
I've got a movie for you to watch. Another issue, and I didn't even put this in our notes, but another one that needs to be addressed is the notion of security. I mean, obviously, there's the you've always heard, I'm sure you guys out there have heard, that things like open Wi-Fi networks are risky because you never know who else is on that network and who might be intercepting your data.
Right. Jonathan, earlier you were like, you go to a coffee shop and use their Wi-Fi. I'm like, no, you don't.
Well, it depends on the coffee shop too, right? I mean, it depends on multiple things. Like, is the Wi-Fi protected in the coffee shop? Even if it is, there's still the chance
of someone sniffing. No, it's unsecured. But if it's secured, the password is coffee.
Right. Or 123 coffee or something along those lines. But, you know, even with all those things, if you're, you know, not doing your banking or whatever, maybe you're not too concerned about it.
Yeah.
But, one potential solution to all of these problems is to replace the radio part of this communication, the communication between devices and the infrastructure that connects to the internet backbone, with something besides radio.
So a guy standing up on a table in the room holding flags up.
Well, similar in that the communication would depend upon light. And if we wanted to use flags, then obviously light is necessary, because I don't know if you've tried to communicate via semaphore in pitch darkness with unlit flags. Not terribly productive.
What if the flags are glow in the dark?
That's different. Then okay. You got, but there's some blurring issues too.
I guess the flags probably would mean it would take a long time to download a file. So what's something that would
be? We're talking about like the 2400 baud modem days.
Like, so what's something that would be a little bit faster than a guy holding up flag signals?
Actual light. I mean, actually using light in place of radio waves.
Like pulses of light, sort of.
Kind of, yeah. Like changing the amplitude of light, so the intensity of light, in order to communicate, which is not that unusual.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, we've been doing it for a very, very long time, but we're talking about something that would have to move a little bit faster than, for example, beacons.
Right, yes. Like the old days where, you know, you are a messenger and you see that there are invaders coming in at the northern border of the country you live in. So you light the beacon to alert everybody else.
It's that scene in Lord of the Rings where they light the beacon to call the, who are the?
Riders of Rohan.
Yes.
Yeah, don't test me, buddy. I was actually just playing the Shadows of Mordor game, and the orcs use beacons in that game. Boy, are they irritating. Anyway, Greeks and Romans were using mirrored plates to send messages using light. They would flash light in a series of flashes to indicate one thing or another. There's the famous story in American history during the Revolutionary War, in which the Old North Church in Boston was used to alert messengers to the troop movements of British troops. The whole one if by land, two if by sea. Referred to in Longfellow's poem, Paul Revere's Ride, which may or may not be apocryphal. There's some arguments, historically speaking, about what exactly happened. Essentially, people say that, yes, lights were used. Whether or not it was the Old North Church is still a matter of some debate. But at any rate, we've been using lights like this for ages.
Yeah, and that is definitely encoding data in light. But, right, it's pretty limited. The fancy word, which Jonathan just mentioned earlier, actually, is semaphore.
Yeah.
Which just means an object that can be placed in different positions or conditions to convey different messages, like flag signals.
Yeah. If you think about it, you could even have set up a semaphore type of signaling system with office mates, where you just have a quietly, like a little cabal, who all know that the placement of certain office equipment or accoutrement in certain locations on certain desks conveys a meaning. And from your blank stares, I can tell neither of you are in it. Never mind, I didn't say anything. So by the early 1800s, the United States was experimenting with a technology called heliographs. These were solar telegraphs. They actually used sunlight and mirrors to try and send messages from signal towers.
That sounds like some steampunk stuff.
It does, doesn't it? It also reminds me of a Terry Pratchett novel in which there was a whole system set up that was competing with the mail on Discworld. But at any rate, they would use Morse code and flash out messages to one another and send messages down the line of signal towers to get the message to where it needs to go. Then there was a guy, you may have heard of him, Alexander Graham Bell.
Who?
Yeah. So he
was he the guy who invented graham crackers?
He was a close friend to the Kellogg's. No. He invented a device called the photophone in 1880, and it used a vibrating mirror to encode voice transmissions on a beam of light. And then you would have a selenium photocell that could pick up that light and convert it back into sound. And it only worked in sunlight. You had to have sunlight blasting down on this thing in order for you to get enough light to send the message.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really neat. And he invented this just 4 years after he patented the telephone.
He had so much hope for this thing. Supposedly, he wanted to name one of his daughters after it. He was so fond of it. That
wanted
also
to name her photophone.
Photophone. Yeah. Didn't work out. Good thing for her.
Maybe he could have named her Photo Phoenicia or something.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
It's sort of pretty.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But it was really, really cool. It was the series of mirrors and lenses that would direct a beam of sunlight. And yeah, they tried it with kerosene lamplight, but it didn't work well enough.
Mm-hmm.
So it would direct a beam of sunlight to a mirror attached to the mouthpiece that you spoke into. the mirror would then bounce the light off through more lenses and onto a receiver. So when you spoke, the mirror would vibrate, thus changing the intensity of the light that was hitting the receiver. And yeah, it worked real well. Very clear sound effects coming through, but it also would pick up noises like clouds passing across the sun.
Right, because you have an interruption in the signal, uh-huh. Right? So
if you've ever been wondering what that sounds like,
it's probably something akin to weird static, I would imagine. But I really want to know.
I know, right?
This is getting cooler and cooler.
Well, it keeps getting cooler. By the 1950s, we have researchers who are looking into using light through cabling systems to create new communication technologies. So to get around this problem of only being able to use sunlight or some other visible light within the area to communicate, they wanted to be able to pass light through cabling, essentially creating very reflective cables that could pass a light signal down them. We're talking about the birth of fiber optics here. And in April 1977, we had the first optic telephone cable put into service. It was owned by General Telephone and Electronics. Soon afterward, other telephone companies were installing fiber optic cables, and those are really the backbone of our telecommunications infrastructure at this point. Like, we think of copper as a signal carrier quite often, but really fiber optics are, that's the true backbone for most of the telecommunications around the world. Now, all that's cool, but what if we were able to go back to Bell's idea of using visible light to communicate? So in other words, what if we were to use light to transmit data through the air and not through cables? So not a system that you hook up to your computer with a physical cord, but rather light, ambient light in your environment, being able to communicate data. And then that would mean we could open up the entire spectrum of visible light for communication. Is that possible?
I mean, that sounds very interesting. One of the things that I often think about is all of the data that's passing through and around us all the time.
Yeah, it's like the force.
Yeah, everywhere you go, there are signals bounding around. I mean, you're walking through the range of Wi-Fi routers, but there are also cell towers.
Sure, radio broadcast towers.
Yeah, stuff's going through you all the time. And it's very bizarre to think, what if you could see all of that?
Right. And then, of course, there are people who believe that their health is affected by these things. Not that we've seen any real medical evidence to support such things, but there are people who truly believe that,
who won't be around Wi-Fi routers at all.
Yeah, because they say that it impacts their health in a mm-hmm. negative way.
Yeah, it really doesn't. These things very much are in the kind of between the microwave and the radio frequency on the spectrum, the electromagnetic spectrum, and they're very safe. There's a very, very low probability that they are in any way affecting anyone's health, especially from a distance of more than like 2 centimeters.
Yeah. I mean, it's non-ionizing radiation. It's just
right.
not that part of the spectrum mm-hmm. that's going to knock molecules loose and
right.
upset your DNA. What it could possibly do is maybe heat up your skin.
Possibly. Yeah. There can be electromagnetic interference that can cause other issues, and we'll talk about that.
And I think the World Health Organization has listed it as a potential carcinogen.
Now, that so you can say that, but another thing to note would be that the sun is a known carcinogen.
Yeah.
It's absolutely accurate.
If you're okay going out in the sun,
yeah.
you should probably be okay getting around a Wi-Fi router every now and then. You might not want to sleep with your head resting on one every day, but
yeah.
Well, the only reason I even brought it up, and I was hesitant to bring it up because
all those Wi-Fi pillows.
Yeah.
So comfy. Sorry.
Because I am very skeptical of the thought that Wi-Fi and other radio frequency communication can have a physical effect on people, particularly at the intensities of our Wi-Fi routers, things of that nature. I'm very skeptical of that. However, one of the reasons I brought it up is because it was one of the benefits that was being touted by Li-Fi, using light instead of radio signals to transmit this data at this last segment between the backbone of the internet and whatever device you want to use. One of the many benefits is that you couldn't complain about the wireless signals hurting you because it's using visible light. If that hurts you, then just being in a room with a lamp would hurt you. But at any rate, let's talk about what.
Well, so one of the benefits is that it counteracts something that is probably not a problem to begin with.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And that was actually my very reaction that you just had. But really, let's talk about Li-Fi.
Yeah.
So super cool idea. You know, it's an offshoot of a broader category called optical wireless communications, or OWC, which does not necessarily have to deal with visible light. It could be anything in the light spectrum. So that could also involve infrared or ultraviolet, something along those lines. So there is another branch, a smaller one called visible light communications, or VLC, and Li-Fi would be part of that. The term was coined by Harold Haas, who is a professor and also has worked with a company called Pure Li-Fi to develop a system.
Yeah, he's their chief science officer.
Yeah. And so this is all about using light within the visible spectrum. And the reason being that he's concentrated on that is that other types of light, like infrared, can be harmful to your eyes. And ultraviolet, as we know, can cause things like skin cancer if you have too much exposure to ultraviolet. So he presented a TED Talk on this subject. And in that TED Talk, he called it D-Light, which I thought was delightful.
Hmm.
I put it in the notes and I had to say it too. He used a system that was called orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, or OFDM, which sounds pretty fancy, but honestly, it gets really simple. It's all about amplifying the signal from an LED light source. And you do that by varying the electric current that's flowing through the LED. And that's all you need to do is just vary that current. By varying the current, you change the amplification of that light. If you have a receiver that can pick up these minute, subtle variations, then they can then decode that as the information that you had intended to send. So you could do this like you could send a movie this way. You could have a light bulb that has a little microprocessor attached to it, and it is pulling the signal from whatever a feed is coming into your home from the internet. So let's say that you've got the internet backbone. You've got fiber optic, let's say, that runs to your house. From there, you would have a system that would take that signal, convert it into the language that would be picked up by this microprocessor and a light bulb. The light bulb would then flash at the frequency, the amplitude changes according to whatever data was being sent, but do so rapidly that your human eyes would be incapable of detecting it. So it would just look like the light bulb's on. It wouldn't look like the light bulb's
like
going.
It's flickering.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a disco.
It wouldn't be like a
ooh, home.
Ghostly light bulb.
No. No, it would be very subtle to the point where, because it'd be at such a high frequency, it would just seem like a steady light source to us. And meanwhile, any devices outfitted with a sensor that could pick up these subtle variations in light amplitude would be able to accept that information. So with the movie example, you could have a home theater where you've got very dim lights on and you've got a receiver of some sort that can take it has that sensor on it that can detect the changes in light. It's connected to your entertainment system and you are beaming the film you're watching through light. There's no physical connection to the entertainment system. There's no radio connection. There are no radio waves going on at all. It's just light beaming that information down, which is pretty awesome. And it can do it pretty effectively. At the TED Talk, he demonstrated this. He had a desk lamp set up that had a light bulb with one of these microprocessors attached to it. And the lamp was hooked up through a system that fed it the data it needed and was set on a table, and the table had a little hole drilled into it.
Mm-hmm.
And through that hole, light would go through that little hole, and on the underside of the table was a sensor that was then connected to a projector. So he turned on the lamp, and the lamp sent information to the sensor that started a video, a high-definition video playing behind him as he gave his talk. And then he demonstrated by interrupting the light source. In other words, he stuck his hand over the hole, and it interrupted the data stream. So the video paused. It was as if your wireless had dropped. And if you've ever had that experience where suddenly, it starts to buffer or it's going through like trying to search for a signal, same sort of thing. He moved his hand and it started up again. So it was an example of, yes, this is live. This is a live feed of information from a light bulb to a computer system and showing you how that information can be transferred just using light. Pretty awesome. Now, the reason he used LEDs was specifically because LEDs work on they're semiconductors, mm-hmm. and you can easily control them by varying that electric frequency or the electric current that goes to those semiconductors. So you can make minute changes very, very quickly. And this is different from other types of light bulbs.
Oh, yeah. You could not do this with an incandescent bulb.
Right. Because incandescent bulbs, what they do is you have – they're essentially resistors, right? You have this filament that resists the flow of electricity. As a result, it heats up. Eventually, it heats up to a temperature that allows it to incandesce or to glow.
It needs time to heat up.
Yeah.
Now, it needs that time. So that would be a rave.
If
you tried to use an incandescent bulb for this.
It would not be able to transmit at near the speed of an LED bulb.
And then, of course, if you wanted to do this with fluorescent lights, you might as well do the guy with the flags on the table.
Yeah.
Same thing. Because fluorescent lights, they use a gas that gets excited by electricity that then
excites another gas that then emits photons.
Yeah. And those photons are usually in the ultraviolet range. So you have to actually put a substance on the inside of the fluorescent bulbs that will fluoresce in the visible spectrum once it's hit by ultraviolet photons. It's kind of
a weird
chain reaction. Yeah. It's like a bucket brigade for people who fight fires.
Yeah.
So when they first started showing this off back in the TED Talk, it was pretty much at a speed of around 10 megabits per second, which is, that's okay. I mean, it's no longer what broadband is considered here in the U.S.
No, I just, for an example of how that compares to, say, my Wi-Fi on my computer from about a minute and a half ago, I'm currently registering download speeds of about 43 megabits per second
and
upload speeds of about 14 megabits per second.
Right, so much faster.
Yes.
But that was just the starting off point. Mm-hmm. And Haas himself is working on systems that are much more advanced than that, including ones that would be using not LEDs, but lasers, low powered lasers. So it's not like they're going to blind you. You know, it's not like you're going to have a bunch of laser pointers going crazy in your house.
It would be hard to sell something that blinded people.
Yeah. Hold on.
What if it blinds somebody else instead of you?
Oh.
Right. If it's the Blindotron 2000, like it's specifically marketed to blind people. At any rate, these lasers are not of that nature. And
that became a sad story fast. I'm sorry. please continue.
Well, but the neat thing about the laser system is that it might be able to achieve a throughput of around 100 gigabits per second, which is insanely fast, right? And when we say fast, obviously, once again, we don't necessarily mean that the data is moving at a faster speed. More like more data can move through that pathway at the same time.
It's throughput. It's not how fast the cars on the highway are driving, but how many lanes there are.
Yeah. So in this case, 100 gigabits per second means that you would be able to have really high quality video, for example, beaming through at this with no buffering necessary. It would be pretty phenomenal.
And so that process is still in, or that technology rather, is still in development.
Yes. The LEDs I've heard are closer to around between 1 and 10 gigabits per second at their current level, which still, I mean, 1 gigabit per second, we're talking about Google Fiber speeds around mm-hmm. there, right? 10 gigabits per second, it's 10 times what's considered ultra fast download speeds according to the current state of the art here in the United States. In his TED Talk, Haas actually said that one of the reasons they looked at this is really that radio frequency capacity crunch. That was a real big reason to look at it. We're adding more and more devices, and we're having more issues with local access points getting bogged down with traffic. So what if we were able to relieve some of that traffic by switching to this light method? And he pointed out that with the visible light spectrum, you have about 10,000 times more capacity than within the entire radio band spectrum. Keeping in mind that lots of the radio band spectrum are already earmarked for other things that we can't touch.
Right. They're regulated by governments of various countries to say that, like, oh, we're setting this aside for this type of official communication, and this aside for television, and this aside for
terrestrial radio mm-hmm. or radar or whatever. You know, so there are certain sections that you just can't do anything with because they're already dedicated for other uses. This would allow us to use a band of frequency in the electromagnetic spectrum that is unregulated and has 10,000 times more capacity.
Currently unregulated.
Yes. If we were to start using it, you could be sure that sooner or later regulation would probably have to follow, just to make certain that you didn't have a bunch of competing communications systems in a similar place that were just going to cause confusion. So, for example, imagine that you're in a mall and the lights are all outfitted with this stuff, but they have been installed over various different times and are all working on different different proprietary approaches. And meanwhile, your device is going crazy because it's receiving all these different signals simultaneously. It'd be like everyone's yelling at the same time. Another neat thing is that this would eliminate the possibility of someone snooping in on your Wi-Fi as long as they're not in the same room you are in.
Because light doesn't go through walls.
Right. As long as you're not, like, you know, in a big glass cube where people could just walk up and hold up a device outside of your giant glass cube, then you'd be fine. You wouldn't have, you know, it would allow for some secure communications protocols that could be really useful in lots of different places. I mean, imagine just from business standpoint, imagine having a business like an office outfitted with this stuff, so that way proprietary secrets would remain more secure. If someone got access to that, then you would know they have access to your people, not to your technology,
or
they have physical
been,
access to your space.
Yeah, or that you've been posting things on Google Docs or whatever.
Right. Yeah. If they found it through some other loophole, but not within your actual like wireless system. And you could even use this to transmit information if you have other lights active in the area. When he was demonstrating it at his TED Talk, Haas showed that this lamp was on a lit stage. It wasn't as if they turned all the lights off and the lamp worked.
Mm-hmm.
They had ambient light from other lighting sources, but because the sensor is really just looking for those subtle modulations, it doesn't matter whether they're light sources you have, assuming they're not also modulating at a super high frequency that could throw in some interference, especially at the same frequency of light that your source is at.
Right.
Because theoretically, you could set the receiver to only look at a certain frequency of light and ignore everything else, in which case that would really, you know, free you up quite a bit. In fact, it would allow you to have multiple devices all getting information from a single source, as long as that single source had multiple LEDs that could all use slightly different frequencies,
mm-hmm.
which is all pretty interesting, in my opinion. And he said that you could even turn down the lights low enough so that it wouldn't be perceptible to humans. Like, it would be at a low enough level where it would seem as if the lights are off, but would still emit enough light for a sensitive receiver to pick up those modulations. So in other words, you don't always have to have the lights on full blast in order for you to get the data from your light bulb to your computer or whatever.
I'm just imagining this as the premise to a movie about the electronic source that drives people crazy. And
so like the signal, but instead of radio frequencies, it's light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the premise behind Chuck, where he sees a series of images and that somehow imprints all of the NSA and CIA's secrets into his brain.
Not Chuck Bryant.
No, the television series,
right.
Chuck, which I just started rewatching, which is the only reason why it was fresh in my mind. But that I thought was pretty interesting was that, you know, again, you can play around with the levels of human perception so that you can still transmit this information without having to have all your lights on, like full blast. And then, like I said, Pure Li-Fi, that's one of the companies working on this and one that Haas works with, is working on systems that could be deployed in the real world. And they're also looking at how do you make this practical? How do you make it in a way where if you are on the move between one area serviced by Li-Fi into another, you can have a seamless experience? Because, you know, like the way we use cell phones, if you're using a cell phone, if you're on the phone and you're traveling and you move from one cell tower service area into another's, there's a handshake that goes on that has a handoff from one cell tower to the other, which allows you to continue your phone call. If we didn't have this technology, once you left that first broadcast area, you would drop a call. You would not be able to continue that conversation.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that everyone has had the experience of driving through an area that's kind of slightly between two different cell towers, and therefore you miss a little bit of a, I mean, maybe your call drops off in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so they're working on creating technology that will let that be just as seamless with their Li-Fi products. Mm-hmm. And they demonstrated one of these products called Li-Flame at the Mobile World Congress in March of 2015, which was in China somewhere, I forget where, but it's on the market, supposedly has been shipped to a few commercial buyers already, and I think the numbers that I've read for that particular version of Li-Flame are that it has a 10 megabit per second uplink and downlink.
That's still pretty impressive, especially, I mean, imagine that you could have this on two devices and allow those two devices to communicate securely. Mm-hmm. Without using radio frequency. So in other words, let's say that we're sitting at this table and I wanted to send a large file to Joe, but I didn't want it to go over the Wi-Fi. If both of our computers had cameras and lights attached to them so that I could beam that directly to Joe, you know, it would just look like the little LED on my computer was just lit. Then to us, it would just seem like it was on. And that's it. But it would actually be beaming that information with those very tiny modulations. That's another reason why people have been touting Li-Fi as a good replacement for Wi-Fi in certain applications, because it would allow for that secure communication, assuming that whomever is wanting to spy on you is not within line of sight. If they could get line of sight to a point where they could also have a receiver getting that light, then obviously they could intercept that information as well.
Just a second here, I would think that you could just as easily encrypt an optical light signal in the visible spectrum as you could encrypt a radio signal, right?
So in other words, have an encryption so that the data is meaningless unless you have the key. Yeah.
I don't see any reason why encryption would be dependent on the spectra.
No, you absolutely could do that. You absolutely could do that. It's just the question of whether or not you would have the direct access to the encrypted data. Because again, like we've said before, encryption gives you a certain level of security, but there is no such thing so far as perfect encryption. Mm-hmm. If someone is determined enough and has access to enough processors, even just using brute force, they can eventually break encryption.
Yeah, I mean, assuming the person doesn't have a quantum computer or
right.
something.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking of this in the use of things like high-level government officials who need to be able to send information secretly to one another, where that's a case where you're talking about there's enough of an incentive to go through the trouble of trying to break that encryption.
Yeah.
Now, if it's me sending you a file of a bunch of actors from Miami Connection, it's probably not going to be as big a deal.
We're just not that interesting.
Yeah.
No. So
forward thinking. Not that interesting.
One of the many slogans that we ultimately decided not to use for this show. We also want to point out that this Li-Fi technology would really be more about replacing that Wi-Fi point of connection, right? It's not about turning the internet into just light, right? The backbone of the internet would remain the backbone of the internet. The infrastructure would not change.
Partially because of the range of this kind of thing. Like it's really only going to go about 3 meters before it starts becoming less than effective.
Yeah. And it's really...
It's about 10 feet.
Yeah. Thank you. It's really also just good for one-way communication for most applications, especially if you're thinking about like in your home. And let's say that you want to use Li-Fi instead of Wi-Fi. Well, unless you have all of your devices with bright lights that can communicate back up through the receivers, and you have receivers all over your home, this is not that, you know, that's not that useful. Like if you move out from one room to another room, you would have to have these receivers in every room. It's not like Wi-Fi where you could, in theory, set up a router in one part of your house and it serves the whole house.
Right.
Right. So like, for example, I live in a house that has multiple floors. It's kind of like in a flat style. Ironically, it's flat, but has multiple floors. Anyway, I put it in the middle level of my house and I get service both in the bottom floor and the top floor. It wouldn't work that way with Li-Fi. I would have to have the light bulbs and receivers in all those rooms in order to have two-way communication.
You must have a good router. I have a hard time getting a signal in the next room.
Well, also, my the way my house is designed, it's like, it's almost like a chimney in that it has a stairway, an open stairway that goes all the way from the bottom all the way to the top. So it's not like there are doorways or anything. You pretty much have a big chamber that's divided by floors. But yeah, it's actually quite a, it seems to be a pretty decent router. I do get fine service in whatever rooms I happen to be in. But Wi-Fi would be different for that. It would be really good for one-way communication where you wanted to beam something like movies or pictures, sound files, that kind of stuff. So if you look at the Pure Li-Fi page, for example, they say, well, one of the places where we're seeing a lot of Wi-Fi crunch is in consumption. The fact that people want to use their internet connections to watch stuff like Netflix, or they want to use it to watch YouTube, you know, these things that require a lot of data throughput.
Video games, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. So it might be better to use Li-Fi to take some of that that load off of the wireless spectrum. But you would still use Wi-Fi in your devices to communicate back up through the internet. So it would be kind of a tag team. And part of that is because, you know, you mentioned, you know, uplink versus downlink. In most data plans, you'll see that your downlink data, your data rate tends to be much higher downlink than uplink.
Sure.
And it's because largely that most of us end up consuming more than we upload. The people in this room, kind of an exception, because we do lots of audio and video. Mm-hmm. But for most people, they're consuming more than they're generating. So to them, they're more interested in getting a very fast rate, getting the stuff to their computers than to upload, because most of the time they're uploading relatively small files.
Mm-hmm.
So this would not be that big of a difference between those kind of plans and Li-Fi. So that's kind of interesting. But another potential use of Li-Fi that Haas pointed out actually in his TED talk was, imagine that you have a system where all the headlights in cars have this technology outfitted to them, and the traffic signals do too. And then you could have cars, and even their brake lights could have this too. All the cars could communicate with one another. They could also communicate with the traffic system. You could have a real-time interactive dynamic traffic system that responds to changing conditions based upon the communication that's going through when people are driving. Now, granted, this would require headlights to be on in order for this to work, obviously. If you mm-hmm. didn't have your headlights on, then you're not transmitting any information. You could receive it, but you wouldn't be able to transmit it.
So we're saying that the incredible future involves a lot of cars all having their headlights on all the time, but never getting stuck at stoplights when nobody is going the other way.
Possibly. At least we would have a robust dynamic traffic system at night. At the very least. Like, if it's not during the day, they would at least be at night, which is kind of cool. It's an interesting idea. And it was one that I had to think about for a while because I was trying to, you know, what applications would I see this being practical for? And when it comes down to my smartphone, I'm not sure that it'd be that practical because I could, again, watch stuff on my phone. I could pull stuff down.
Well, as long as you were very carefully standing in a place where you were receiving the light transmission, because
yeah.
if you moved, if you like shifted so that your head was blocking.
Right. And then I would block the signal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this definitely has its limitations. So I think it's really important to note that, right? To take that into account, saying, all right, light is not going to completely replace Wi-Fi in all applications everywhere. It's not practical. But there are some that make sense. For example, underwater. If you want to do like a scientific survey of an area and you're using multiple underwater rovers, then you need a way to communicate with those, and light might be better than radio because radio signals attenuate underwater. It's why we don't use radar. We use sonar underwater, not radar. But light would be very useful in that case. You could use this amplification modulation to communicate between various vehicles or tools to be able to do more effective surveys underwater, all sorts of different applications there. So it may be that when we have our underwater hotels that we talked about many, many moons ago,
yeah.
this is how we end up communicating with each other. I'm not going to hold my breath.
Oh, I see what you did there, Jonathan.
I'm almost ashamed of that. And getting back to the idea of using light instead of radio frequencies in environments where radio frequencies might not be safe, so hospitals or potentially planes, although there's a lot of people who argue that the whole plane thing is greatly exaggerated, or in areas where electromagnetic interference could potentially cause a catastrophic event, like a petrochemical manufacturing plant, where if you had electromagnetic interference in part of the system, it could cause an explosion. Light is harmless in that scenario. You could use light instead to transmit information and get around that electromagnetic frequency interference. And so it could be really useful in those applications. Don't know if we're going to see that because, I mean, at least for airplanes, obviously it would require that people have devices that are compatible with this technology. And unless it becomes so widespread that everything comes with it, that may never happen. But it might end up being something that is used to transmit information directly to an entertainment system that's embedded in the plane itself. That's a possibility. So I thought that was all very interesting. And, you know, it's a neat idea. It's a neat way to get around this radio frequency spectrum crunch, at least in specific applications. And obviously it's this kind of thinking that is required for us to continue on this path of evolution as we add more and more demands to this internet infrastructure we've built.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see whether or not it picks up.
Yeah, me too. I've been interested in reading about it over the past year, and it's recently popped up again as people have kind of rediscovered it, or some people have discovered it for the first time. And I would love to see a demonstration of this personally, like an actual demonstration. I kick myself that there was apparently a demonstration of a smartphone outfitted with a receiver that would allow it to take in this information at CES 2014.
You were there.
I was there, and I didn't know about it.
Oh.
I'm kicking myself.
There's so much at CES. It's not like you can see every single thing on the show floor.
There are upwards of a dozen booths at CES. every
More
couple
than
of square
three.
Feet.
Yeah.
No, CES has a lot of stuff going on, but this would have been one of those things that I wish I had known about going into it, because it would have been – I clearly would have covered it. This would have been a great story for Forward Thinking. But here's hoping that I might see something similar to that next CES. So hope springs eternal. But this was really fun to kind of talk about this technology. We don't often focus on a specific tech like this. We tend to look at more broad topics, but this was kind of fun to look at a specific implementation. If you guys have anything futuristic that you want us to talk about, whether it's a specific type of technology or it's just an idea, you know, what will X be like in the future? You need to get in touch with us. Let us know. We love to hear from you. Our email address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com, or you can drop us a line on Facebook, Twitter, or Google Plus. At Twitter and Google Plus, we are FW Thinking. Or at Facebook, just search FW Thinking. Our profile will pop up. You can leave us a message there, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, Centratech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed,
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to the one and only Ryan Seacrest.
Love the connection to people. I think at the core, what I get excited about, what gets me up in the morning, is connecting with people in an unscripted, unvarnished way. It's getting to say something to them, hear back from them, know that I'm part of the routine, and I look forward to getting on the air. I look forward to it.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.